The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article is going to be entitled Tips to Cheat Safely on Your Healthy Diet, coming from the Harvard Health Letter of December 2020. Here is a formula to enjoy foods you love during the holiday season and all year through. For many people, this season of wonder includes wondering if you can cheat on a healthy diet. How much can you indulge in rich, salty, or sugary holiday cuisine without risking weight gain, heart and blood pressure problems, or high blood sugar? Some people are more sensitive than others to salt, saturated fat, or added sugars. We sometimes see diet affecting blood pressure or cholesterol in as little as a few weeks after people splurge, said registered dietitian Kathy McManus, director of the Health Department of Nutrition at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women Hospital. That makes dietary cheating a bit risky. But for generally healthy people, McManus says there is a formula that allows you to bend the rules this holiday season and beyond. Ideally, you should always follow a healthy eating plan, such as the Mediterranean-style diet. In addition, you need to limit the following. Added sugars. Eating too much sugar can cause repeated blood sugar spikes and increase your risk for diabetes. Limit intake to no more than 24 grams per day for women and 36 grams for men. Salt. In some people, consuming too much salt can increase blood pressure. Healthy people should limit intake to 2,300 milligrams per day. Saturated fat. Eating too much of this type of fat, found in red meat and full-fat dairy products, can increase bad LDL cholesterol and raise your risk for heart disease. McManus advises limiting saturated fat to 7% of your daily calories. To figure out how many grams of saturated fat that would be, take 7% of your daily calories and divide it by 9. 1 gram of fat has 9 calories. For example, if you're eating 1,500 calories a day, 0.07 times 1,500 is 105, and 105 divided by 9 is 12 grams of saturated fat. What about calories? Daily calorie needs depend on many factors, including your age, your activity level, your body composition, your overall health, and your weight goals. If you're a healthy person who exercises 30 minutes per day, you can estimate how many daily calories you need to maintain your current weight by multiplying your weight in pounds by 15. For example, if you weigh 130 pounds, multiply 130 by 15. The answer, 1,950, is the number of calories you need per day to stay at 130 pounds. Eating more is going to lead to weight gain. Eating less could lead to weight loss. While a good diet is crucial for health, bending the rules on occasion probably won't hurt. A tip you can try is the 90-10 rule. Eat a healthy diet 90% of the time and splurge 10% of the time, McManus says. Eating 3 meals a day for a week means 21 total meals. Avoid splurging for more than 2 of those meals. What about doing a 90-10 plan every day during the holidays, devoting 10% of your daily calories to unhealthy holiday foods? That's probably more likely to lead to bad habits. If you occasionally go slightly over the daily guidelines for calories, salt, added sugar, and saturated fat intake, it's probably not going to be a problem, McManus says. But making every meal a little unhealthy by design, that's likely to cause problems. Pitfalls. Knowing that you can cheat a little might tempt you to push the 90-10 rule beyond its limits. For example, you might overdo a cheat meal. We know for sure that a regular diet that's unhealthy can over time increase your long-term risk of developing heart disease. But it may also be true that a big unhealthy meal can cause immediate risks. Let's say you binge on a juicy steak, mashed potatoes, and a hot fudge sundae. That rich meal contains 47 grams of saturated fat, 32 grams of sugar, 1,330 calories, 70 grams of carbohydrates, and 2,555 milligrams of sodium. Some small studies suggest eating a heavy meal increases the risk for heart attack. Theoretically, a large unhealthy meal does lead to various biochemical changes in the body, like increases in triglyceride levels, which could contribute to an elevated risk for heart attack in the hours following the meal, says Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt, a cardiologist and the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. You gain weight and keep it on. Maybe you'll exceed the dietary guidelines for the entire holiday season and tell yourself you'll compensate for it in January and February. Unfortunately, studies of what actually happens in the post-holiday period find that many people weigh more in March than before the holidays. January and February didn't fully correct for the holiday splurging. Perhaps you get used to indulging and then can't break that habit. Perhaps once you gain weight, your body resets your metabolism to a higher weight, so you get hungry more easily. Unless you're putting a lot of effort into maintaining weight loss, you can return to the previous baseline weight, McManus explains. Biology isn't on our side, and old behaviors are still there. We may slide back into our previous ways, and calories will go up and exercise will go down, so weight drifts back up. Try to follow a healthy diet on most days and allow yourself the pleasure of occasionally indulging. For the holiday season, you may want to enjoy a few particular dishes, meals, or events, McManus suggests. Plan ahead for that, but also plan how you'll be eating when you're not overindulging. Carry that idea through to January, and then each month after that. Don't bargain with yourself. Try to maintain an even style of healthy eating with occasional cheating on your diet. You'll wind up feeling satisfied that you get to enjoy the foods you love, and you may have more success maintaining your weight goals. Now here's some news briefs from the Harvard Health Letter. BPA is now linked to premature death. Bisphenol A, also known as BPA, used to make some plastics and epoxy resins, has made headlines for years because of its association with an increased risk for obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cardiovascular disease in humans. Now, high levels of BPA exposure have been linked to an increased risk for premature death from any cause, according to a study published online August 17, 2020, by JAMA Network Open. Scientists analyzed the survival rates of 3,900 people who provided health information and urine samples and were then followed for 10 years. People with the highest level of BPA in their urine had a 51% higher risk of dying during that period, primarily from heart disease, compared with people who had the lowest level of BPA. The findings don't prove that BPA causes premature death, but they added to concerns about BPA's potential toxicity. BPA and related chemicals are found in many products, like water bottles, cups, dental sealants, paper receipts, and the linings of food and beverage cans and pipes, so it's hard to avoid them. Simple precautions include relying less on canned foods and more on fresh foods, avoiding plastics with a 3 or 7 recycling label, microwaving food in glass or ceramic containers, not plastic, and looking for BPA-free products. Telemonitoring is tied to fewer heart attacks, lower medical costs. If your doctor or pharmacist offers a service to monitor blood pressure measurements you send from home, called telemonitoring, consider taking advantage of it. Past research has shown that telemonitoring, often paid for by Medicare, may help you reduce your blood pressure. And a study published online August 31st of 2020 by the journal Hypertension suggests telemonitoring is also associated with a long-term reduction in heart attacks, strokes, and medical costs. The recent study is a follow-up to a randomized controlled trial from 2013 that divided 450 people into two groups, those who received routine primary care and those who received a year of telemonitoring services with a pharmacist who helped manage their treatment. People in the telemonitoring group had lower blood pressure for up to 2 years afterward, compared with people who received routine care. In the recently published follow-up, which followed the same participants for 5 years, researchers found there were about half as many heart attacks, strokes, and hospitalizations in the telemonitoring group as there were in the group that received routine care. Because there were fewer cardiovascular problems, people in the telemonitoring group saved an estimated $1,900 each in medical costs. Here's another short article from the News Briefs, Harvard Health Letter, December 2020. Awe walks inspire more joy, less distress. Need a little inspiration? The next time you take a walk outside, note things that spark a sense of wonder or awe. That's what some older adults tried for a small study published online September 21st, 2020, by the journal Emotion. Of the 50 people who took part, half went for weekly 15-minute walks outdoors alone for 8 weeks and snapped selfies along the way. The other half took the same walks and selfies, but visited a new place each time. They were asked especially to note things that inspired a sense of awe, like tree colors or leaves underfoot softened by rain. Participants also answered surveys about the emotions they felt on the walk and non-walk days. After analyzing responses and photos, scientists found that people who took the awe walks, that's A-W-E, reported less distress and increasing awe, joy, compassion, and gratitude compared with people on the regular walks. Awe walkers also smiled more and made themselves smaller in their photos, focusing more on landscapes, a sign of greater appreciation of the world around them. Try it yourself. On your next walk, imagine you're seeing things for the first time. What will inspire you? Perhaps a path lined with trees, the shore of a lake, or an up-close look at skyscrapers. Jot down your observations and see if you feel a sense of wonder and joy. Happy trails. Now I'm going to turn to the Mayo Clinic health letter for December 2020. And the first article is about glaucoma. Saving sight. Apart from your occasional adjustment to your eyewear prescription, your routine eye exam usually offers no surprises. However, at your latest exam, you receive a worrisome diagnosis. Your eye specialist detected elevated eye pressure that often is an indication of glaucoma. Thankfully, damage to your vision appears to be very slight and unnoticeable to you, and your doctor says that treatment steps should be able to keep it that way. Glaucoma is a group of eye disorders that can damage the optic nerve and pose a serious vision threat at any age, but especially in older adults. It's sometimes called a silent thief of sight, because it can gradually rob you of your vision while you barely even notice it's happening to you. Most glaucoma can't be prevented, but regular eye examinations can catch early signs before substantial vision loss occurs. Although there's no way to reverse damage already done, treatment to lower pressure in your eye can slow vision loss and progression of the disease. Drainage issues. Internal eye pressure, intraocular pressure, allows the eye to hold its shape and function properly. Eye pressure is determined by the flow of a fluid called aqueous humor that circulates around the lens and cornea. The fluid drains out of the eye through a sieve-like drainage system called the trabecular meshwork at the angle where your iris and cornea meet. A healthy eye produces aqueous humor at the same rate the fluid drains, which results in normal eye pressure. This continuous flow nourishes the eye and removes unwanted debris. Sometimes, though, drainage of aqueous humor becomes obstructed, raising pressure within the eye. Although optic nerve damage due to glaucoma can occur at any level of internal eye pressure, high eye pressure puts you at a greatly increased risk of this damage and in turn impairs vision. In people who develop glaucoma due to high pressure, there are two main categories, each based on what's inhibiting the aqueous humor drainage. The first is called open-angle glaucoma. With open-angle glaucoma, increased resistance develops to the drainage of aqueous humor through the trabecular meshwork. The drainage angle formed by the cornea and the iris remain open, but the flow through the trabecular meshwork becomes more difficult, causing pressure in the eye to increase. Blockage may result from structural changes to the trabecular meshwork tissues, as well as from debris and other substances that clog up the tissues. It often causes no symptoms. Open-angle glaucoma is much more common in the United States than angle closure glaucoma. Angle closure glaucoma is a second kind. It's also called closed angle glaucoma. This type occurs when the sharp angle formed by the cornea and the iris narrows or closes. This creates resistance to the outflow of aqueous humor, causing eye pressure to go up. Some people have naturally narrow drainage angles, which put them at higher risk of angle closure glaucoma. Aging and cataract formation also can lead to narrowing of drainage angles. Less often, a mass or hemorrhage pushes the angle closed. Occasionally, the drainage angle may close off suddenly, which is called acute angle closure glaucoma, leading to a medical emergency and often causing severe pain. It's not entirely clear how elevated eye pressure results in the optic nerve damage associated with glaucoma. Not everyone with elevated eye pressure develops optic nerve damage. Some people's eyes seem better than others at tolerating high intraocular pressure. Conversely, many people develop glaucoma even if the pressure in their eye is within a normal range. Glaucoma tends to run in families, and researchers have identified multiple genes that appear to modestly increase the risk of glaucoma. Other biologic factors that may influence optic nerve damage include insufficient blood flow to the optic nerve, the way the immune system responds to retinal damage, and low pressure in the brain, which can cause a large pressure difference between the eye and the brain. African Americans who are older than 40 have a much higher risk of developing glaucoma. African Americans are also more likely to develop permanent blindness as a result of glaucoma. People of Asian descent have an increased risk of developing angle closure glaucoma. Glaucoma screening as part of a comprehensive eye exam is recommended every 1 to 2 years for people older than 65. For people between 40 and 65 who are at a low risk of eye disorders, screening is recommended every 2 to 4 years. If you have an increased risk of glaucoma, your doctor may recommend earlier or more frequent monitoring. A cupped disc. Elevated intraocular pressure detected with a test called tonometry helps determine your risk of glaucoma. Identifying areas of vision loss, which can be done with a visual field test, can help determine the extent of any vision damage. However, a diagnosis of glaucoma is based on the appearance of the optic nerve. Using special instruments like a slip lamp biomicroscope or an ophthalmoscope, your doctor can examine your optic disc located where the optic nerve meets the retina. If there is damage, the disc will appear indented or hollowed out. This cupping of the disc indicates the death of nerve cells. If glaucoma is diagnosed, your doctor may also perform tests or make observations to determine whether you have open angle or angle closure glaucoma. If your optic nerve is damaged, you'll most likely be treated for glaucoma to preserve remaining sight. The damage caused by glaucoma can't be reversed, but with treatment, the disease can be controlled. Although high eye pressure isn't required to develop glaucoma, all treatments are aimed at reducing pressure to a safe level, which is determined for each individual. There's several different therapies. The first is medication. Most doctors initially recommend prostaglandin eye drops to improve the outflow of aqueous humor. These include latanoprost or Xalatan, travoprost or Travitan, tefluoprost, Zioptan, bimatoprost or Lumigan, and latanoprostene Bunod, which is also called Vizulta. Possible side effects include mild reddening and stinging of the eyes, darkening of the iris, longer eyelashes, darkening of the pigment of the eyelashes or eyelid skin, and blurred vision. If these drugs aren't effective, there are other drugs your doctor can recommend. These include beta blockers, which lower the pressure in your eye by reducing the production of fluid in your eye, and alpha adrenergic antagonists, which reduce the production of aqueous humor and may improve outflow of the fluid in your eye. Another treatment is called laser treatment. If medications aren't working, your doctor may recommend a procedure called trabeculoplasty to treat open-angle glaucoma. The 10 to 20-minute office procedure uses a low-energy laser beam to remodel and clear part of the trabecular meshwork to free up the flow of aqueous humor. There is a trend toward offering laser trabeculoplasty earlier, and it may be recommended before medications in some people. Doctors may recommend a different procedure called iridotomy for people who have angle closure glaucoma. In this, a very small hole is created in the iris with the intent of improving the flow of fluid to the drainage angle. Laser treatment can effectively lower eye pressure, but pressure may increase over time, and a procedure may need to be repeated. And then another possible treatment is surgery. If necessary, your doctor may use surgery to improve the drainage of aqueous humor. This is often trabeculectomy, which creates a small opening in the top of the eye, allowing aqueous humor to drain through. Another option is to insert a small silicone tube and plate to drain aqueous humor. Devices and surgeries have been developed to bypass the blockage in the trabecular meshwork, reducing pressure. However, these don't seem to lower pressure as much as trabeculectomy or drainage tubes do, and are more suitable for people who have severe vision loss from glaucoma. In addition, several newer and emerging approaches to pressure-lowering glaucoma surgery, which are called MIGS, may be an option. These procedures require less immediate postoperative care and have a lower risk of side effects, but they don't lower the pressure as much as trabeculectomy. They're often combined with cataract surgery. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Have a good day. Thank you.